Rudra, the floor is yours now.
Well, Harley, thank you for the opportunity, and my thanks to all the participants who have joined us from different parts of the country. I was just reflecting, as I was looking through the slides, that over the last several years now, it isn't a Wednesday afternoon unless there's a Pfizer talk announcement that I'm looking over. So first off, let me say my thanks to you all, the organizers of the Pfizer talk, for it's such low overhead, continuing through the years, almost like clockwork. The U.S. Post Office and you are always there every week unless it's Christmas or something. So thank you for that, and it is great to be here speaking with you all. So for those of you who don't know me, I am Rudra Mukherjee. I am a robotics technologist at NASA JPL. But for the purposes of this call, I lead the SpaceSmart think tank activity along with my co-organizers, John Grunsfeld, former astronaut and former AA for NASA SMD, Joe Parrish and Gordon Ressler, current and former program managers for DARPA RSGS, and then everybody knows Harley Thronson. We also have the benefit of Sam Glassner, a graduate student at Virginia Tech, who's on the line with us, working with us as a part of the organizing team for this community think tank activity. We came up with the name SMART, a little bit tongue-in-cheek, but it stands for Servicing, Manufacturing, Assembly, Robotics, and Transportation. So we'll talk to you about that. One caveat, the opinions presented here are those of the authors only and do not represent the positions of their professional affiliations. And as we get into the talk, you will see that we benefited from a lot of people working with us, and the same perhaps applies to all of them as we go forward. So SpaceSmart is a community think tank. It's a virtual forum right now, given where we are with the COVID. We're about 40-odd participants from different parts of government, industry, and some from academia. We've been at this for about 5-6 months now and still going strong. So today I'm going to share with you some of the sausage making behind this think tank activity and some of the findings and the future directions of where we are going. They'll be doing it by tag team. I'll present a few of the slides. Harley will present some of them, and then we'll talk to Gordon, and he'll present a few, and I'll finish up. So let's get started. I go to slide 2. That is basically a montage of a lot of graphics, and many of us have seen, and I bet if you take a poll, most of us will probably be able to say, yes, I've seen this, and I know where this came from. But what this represents is sort of our collective imagination over the many decades, ever since the space age began, of getting to space and doing work in space and living in space and having space as our backyard, if you will, the extension of our frontiers. We've gone there, we've been there, there have been significant achievements, and we continue to make strides towards business in space and activities. But a lot of the grand visions that we had of, cities and space and constructing large telescopes and fuel depots and tugs and so forth, many of them have over the last several decades remained in our collective conscience, but haven't really come to fore. And, when we got together, the core group that I mentioned, we decided and we thought that maybe we are getting to the point where these are in our near future rather than aspirational or imaginations only. Or maybe there's a discussion to be had as a community to figure out whether these are within reach. So if you go to slide 3, what we felt as a group was that we are sort of at a turning point in space operations. There have been major developments over the last decade now, and you can see some of these circles that show images of some of the technologies that have been developed over the last decade. And I don't want to go through them in detail, but we all feel like we are turning the page on the early stage of space operations and moving to the next step, if you will. The early stage doesn't necessarily mean it was an easy stage. There were a lot of sacrifices, there were a lot of challenges. But the paradigm of a single launch and a single spacecraft and very expensive, complex systems, you know, that's the first stage that we're sort of getting through now, and we're sort of standing at the cusp of getting into our next generation of space operations. And so new challenges and opportunities lie ahead of us, and are we ready to sort of take these on? And what spurs this turning point in space operations, perhaps, is the decades of technology investment and activities, as shown in those circles that have occurred, you know, strategically, tactically, however they may be, but they're all sort of coming together, if you will. And we felt that perhaps, right, perhaps, and not necessarily a given answer, you know, perhaps that when you take these capabilities together, they enable a new vision of space operations beyond what servicing does for you, beyond us, you know, what assembly does for you and transportation does for you individually. Is there a larger picture that emerges from all of these things, you know, collectively working together? Slide four now. And so developing a compelling vision for the future of space, you know, it requires a diverse set of perspectives, including those who are big fans of this and including those who look at it with a grain of salt and some who look at this and say, huh, that's a long ways away. So we brought together a group of about 40 people, a representative group, not exhaustive or comprehensive in any way, but a representative group of leaders from different parts of the space sector. As you can see, 17 members from industry and so forth. And these came from, and these individuals came from different parts of government and industry and NGOs and academia. And for the most part, these individuals were funded by their home organizations. We are a community think tank. We are not funded or chartered by any entity, but we do have funding from DIU for Sam to participate with us as a student, and then from the Naval Research Lab for a technical writer who has been working with us, and my shout out and thanks to them for helping out. But for the most part, most of the individuals involved in this are funded by the home organizations or are failing at retirement, like my good friend Harley. So the think tank operated under Chatham House rules. So there's no attribution to what an individual said, and there's no attribution back to their home organizations under any circumstances. These are primarily individuals with subject matter expertise or mutual interest or a skeptical perspective, looking at SMART and discussing openly. The charges, or the charge to the SMART think tank, you know, basically we looked at it in terms of three questions. And you can see it's about what, why, and how. What would the future of space look like with SMART, right? That was our first question. And here we assumed that, you know, technology hurdles would have been overcome, or we assume that if you extrapolate from where we are today in terms of technology, in the next 10, 15, 20, 30 years, we sort of used educated extrapolations of where technology would be. But the most important question perhaps was, why would it look like that, right? Just because it's a cool technical thing and we aspire for it, does that make it worthy, or is there an explicit and implicit reason for doing that, a value proposition point of view? And then if the answer came back as yes, we would then explore, you know, how do we get there? And so we took on a fiduciary responsibility almost to not lead the witness. We wanted to, you know, ensure that whatever came out of these conversations was organic. And so if that why came back and said, no, this is not something which is worthy at the current time, that would still have been success. But I think, you know, I'm here to tell you that not only did we hear that, you know, SMART is worthy and we should go forward and do this, the think tank, which is supposed to wind down in middle of December, the team members came back and said, let's not wind down, let's just keep going. And so what we originally planned to be look back on the think tank talk is basically an interim report today, and we continue to move forward with our activities. So what did these activities look like? Here's sort of the notional schedule of, you know, from August to December as we went forward. We started by doing what we call the brainstorming session, where we asked individuals in the teams to go away and come back with a concept of what kind of a mission they would see happen with SMART and present that to the larger group. and capture that in a single slide with sufficient granularity that we could have a 10-15 minute conversation and understand what that mission concept looks like. And we were worried that, you know, once we would get past the large telescopes and maybe even persistent platforms and then servicing and refueling, there would be crickets. After like the first four or five applications, there wouldn't be much. But it was surprising to see a wealth of ideas come forward. And I'll talk about that, or Harley will talk about that in the next slide. Once we got past that phase of generating concepts and you know, ensuring that we have a strong base of things that SMART can do for us, and we collectively feel like that they can do that for us, we went through a SWOT analysis collectively, qualitatively, not quantitatively, and we looked at the strengths, weaknesses, opportunities, and threats. I can tell you upfront that none of the mission concepts or ideas came back as all strengths and opportunities. There were weaknesses and threats that were very real, that was very objective. And we also looked at the SWOT of SMART as an overarching capability. And so when we went to that review at the end of week 12, we felt like there was a, as they say, a there with SMART. And we could have had an answer which says, no, you know, it's not here yet. And so there was a positive outcome from a SMART perspective, but either answer would have been fine with us. And once we got that sense of, yes, this is worthy, we engaged in this pestle activity, right, of doing a brainstorming of traits based off actions that one can take or one in the community could take along the lines of the political, economical, sociocultural, technical, and so forth. And we sort of got to this review in the middle of December, where we looked back on the think tank, and we decided collectively that we should continue to work forward. And so I'll talk about that towards the end of the talk. But Harley, let's go to you now to slide 6.
Okay, sounds fine. Great, thanks. So we're going to go back about half a year to midsummer-ish. And on slide 6, you'll see the list of the results of the brainstorm. We had the better part, we had almost 70 concepts that were presented. I'm not going to go through these in any detail. Many of you will recognize some of the topics there. Some will be unusual. We'll be talking about them a little bit more. There, of course, is a little bit of overlap and so on. We'll get to that in just a moment. But there were quite a few. We were impressed. It was a nice mixture, a nice diverse set of concepts. One thing that I like to point out when you go through this is that, and you see these the stoplight colors here just to the left of each of these, which gives the which of the five theme areas, five topic areas, SMART, these go. I like to point out, recognize that R, robotics, is almost entirely throughout this. Robotics are a key enabling capability for future. For the folks in our audience, that probably shouldn't surprise you much. In any case, we need to combine this very large number of individual concepts into, or integrate them into themes, and that's the next chart, number 7. We took those nearly 70 concepts and we organized them into 11 topic areas for the SWOT analysis, and you see those topics there. They were still, larger topics were still fairly diverse. There were two or three, sometimes four more, of the concepts in each one of these, and a number of the concepts could have been put into a different one. But in general, we were satisfied that there was a nice distribution of concepts among these topic areas, which we said undertook to carry out the topic analysis. And it was as Rudra emphasized, we carried out before he really undertook the SWOT analysis, we really had to convince ourselves that these were concepts and then these topics were consistent with the goals of the SMART analysis. SMART really does apply to a very diverse, as you note here, spectrum of mission concepts, and they have a variety of characteristics that are listed in those roughly 10 bullets there. Happy with this set of topic areas, did a SWOT analysis. Let's go on to chart 7. The results of the SWOT analysis, We combined, where we took the results and combined those results into three major.
Pretty sure you're on slide 8.
I am on slide 8. Thank you. Combined into three major, as we say here, mission type analyses for our subsequent analysis and debate and presentation to other folks. They are distributed among transport, platforms and structures, manufacturing, assembly, and servicing. And the characteristics, the content of each of those three areas are listed beneath them. And the characteristics are on the right-hand side of, again, thank you, slide 8. Note, first bullet, almost all of these require multiple launches and or significant in-space manipulation operations to achieve their initial operating capabilities. They almost all involve revisit in one way or another. That's very attractive to be enabled by the smart vision. I like this one. The fourth bullet on the right, the abilities. Fundamental aspects, which are highly desirable for loads of the concepts that we all have developed and worked on and developed in the past. Maintainability, sustainability, affordability. And a key point that as we started to present our work to colleagues, we want to be prepared to answer an obvious first question, which is the last bullet there, which is our preparation for that last bullet there. Almost, not all, but almost all of these have important, critical, we note here, sellable, initial, early, or demonstration missions. This is not something that is far out. Oh, well, yes. SMART will enable the future missions, but there are initial near-term missions that demonstrate that this is important, that SMART, the SMART vision is an initial and important capability to develop, an initial and important or important vision to carry out, which is on slide 9. This is one of the takeaway slides. This is one of the slides that I say, if you want to remember something I said in an earlier presentation, if you need to talk to your supervisor, colleagues, your spouse, something like someone like that, print this out and carry it around in your wallet. This will lead into more specific examples. The SMART vision and compare the SMART vision with where we are today, which is the first short paragraph there. Notice the constraints that we are facing in designing even very successful missions today. Fully integrated and highly constrained into the launch vehicle, limited by the launch loads, often no ability to be replenished or improved, no ability to freely move and or maneuver in space. So a history of generally some very extremely successful missions. We all acknowledge that, but also limited in some key capabilities that the SMART vision is intended to alleviate. The SMART vision, the second smallish paragraph there, integrated our ecosystem of persistent assets utilizing the diverse launch vehicles that have been developed to achieve NASA goals and commercial goals. Freely maneuvering in space, manufacturing one day, maybe far future, but assembly in space, and servicing and sustaining enabled by the robots. This is the reason that I pointed out how frequently robots were identified as a necessary capability to achieve a lot of the concepts so identified about 3 slides before. All this leads to 3 key themes in our vision as we engage a broader community and justify why we think SMART is so important for the future. Moving and maneuvering, manufacturing, as I said, one day, but assembly in the near future, possibly, servicing and sustaining. Together, these 3 very broad, highly capable aspects of the vision for the future are the key legs of the smart vision. Okay, let's see. And
hey, Harley, you think of as an existence proof of this or as a precursor, think of how much the missions have been enhanced by being able to update software on orbit or in space previously, up till now. And it sort of gives you an indicator of what would happen when you have these other capabilities.
I think, an excellent example. The mental picture, which is consistent with the point that you have, well, one of the mental pictures I have of an analog or demonstration of a smart vision is how successful we have been with the Hubble Space Telescope, with upgrading the IT system, computer software, and so on. And of course, obviously, the instrumentation on the Hubble telescope. Imagine that capability applied broadly throughout the Earth-Moon system. But good example, Martin. Thank you. Okay. Gordon, I think you're next up.
Thank you, Harley. This is Gordon Ressler. Good afternoon to you all. So the think tank had a lot of hypotheses, I think you'd say, going into it. And so we looked at and we believe validated all of the ones that are listed on this page. We think that not only does it impact all the sectors of U.S. space operations, science, exploration, commercial, national security, but that it should also be developed in common across all of those sectors. We can see opportunities for innovation, opportunities for increased economic activity in space coming out of these new abilities. This would expand the U.S. business base, create new jobs and businesses, overcome the tyranny of the launch fairing. Harley mentioned assembly a couple of times. This would allow structures in space that were impossible to origami into a single fairing. We have now a diversity of launch systems appearing before us. Many are being developed by the private sector, a couple by the government. And the ability to mix and match payloads and combine them on orbit and that sort of thing provides a lot of flexibility and possibly whole new ways of operating the launch infrastructure. The life cycle of space project obviously changes. Perhaps one of the most interesting changes is the risk posture, where if a spacecraft is more modular, a failure of a component doesn't mean a failure of the mission. That the replacement is possible and upgrade is possible as well. Also we can avoid through some of these techniques the need for delicate structures to have to withstand the launch environment. So we can launch components that are robust and rugged and assemble them in space to gossamer ephemeral structures optimized for their operating environment rather than launch environment. And we see opportunities here for U.S. leadership to grow, for international cooperation, for example, by hosting payloads that are developed by other nations that perhaps don't have the resources to fly fully integrated satellites, and some very particular applications in climate science. So you see expanded design options. The life cycle costs we can have a discussion about, but honestly, once we get to the point where we're having fewer failures in the ability to upgrade things. Rapid technology infusion is important to the commercial sector to keep up with their customer base, as well as the national security sector. This is a list of things that we think are of great benefit to our nation and the entire world space enterprise. Harley showed earlier how we had binned all of our concepts into 11 sort of topic areas. One of our participants said a very interesting thing. He said, I want to talk about mission. I don't really know how to think about SMART until I know what missions you would actually apply it to. And I thought that was a very reasonable question. So here we have on the left 18 different space missions. This is not exhaustive. These are not all the missions that are going on. But the first six of them are ones that are actually happening now.
Gordon.
Right? Yes.
Slide 11, right?
slide 11. Broadband services from LEO. Protect national security satellites. Continuity of meteorological data. In-space test and qualification. Cislunar domain awareness. Enhanced Earth observation. This happens to be the DoD version of this slide where we've specifically called out which of these missions are belong to the new United States Space Force. Those are starred. So we compared all 18 of these missions to our topic areas and said, which of our topics, which of our concept groupings to provide benefit to these mission areas? When you do that, as you can see on the right with all the dots, there are three topic areas, three concept groupings that address a lot of these missions. And those are the three columns of the persistent platform, the fuel depot, and long-range transport vehicles, tugs, and services. You know, there are applications for the our other topic areas in some of these missions, but these three topic areas, these three concept groups, came out very strong. Going on to slide 12. Now here is an you know, similar to two slides ago. This talks about some of the things we can do specifically for science and for exploration. Service the Roman Space Telescope, it will be serviceable, and perhaps assemble the one after that in space. Deeper understanding of climate change, and just to explain what we mean here, if we took the sensors that are today in the A-train, and in the next generation, we put them all on a single platform and provide it and launch them up there sequentially as they became available, as their launches were successful, it would provide temporal and spatial coincidence of those measurements rather than having them spaced out in time and distance to some extent. It also allows more frequent updates of those instruments, so you don't have to launch a completely integrated spacecraft in order to get the kind of measurements that the A-train take now. You launch a payload, and that is integrated onto a platform that provides its pointing, its station keeping, its power, communications, and so on. We think that small spacecraft can have large antennas if we assemble them on orbit. We could build large interferometers. That's something that's of interest to DoD for radio frequency location. The Starshade that people talk about is a large assembly project. Radars and radio telescopes, maybe the next Arecibo could be built in space. We could support, through a logistics network, infrastructure on the lunar surface, as well as using some of the robotic techniques to do construction, to do support of human activities. I'm not certainly an expert on our approaches for getting to Mars, but there are parts of that plan, if you will, that are amenable to being assisted by smart technologies. And by creating stations in space that are dedicated to manufacturing and providing them with a downmass capability as well as an upmass capability, you can imagine some new products coming to Earth. And in the longer term, you can imagine the space solar power stations that have been the subject of speculation for so long. Going on to slide 13, now we're switching from NASA benefits to defense and national security benefits. One of the key benefits of a smart architecture would be a logistics infrastructure that stretches from low Earth orbit to GEO to other exotic orbits and cislunar and even low lunar orbit. There's a saying in the military, if you're not thinking about logistics, you lose. And it's clear that in the long run, we will need logistics in space just like we have in all other domains. We've talked about risk tolerance before. Modularity would be a contributor to changing the risk profile and thereby bringing costs down for some of the more exquisite national security missions. Maneuver without regret is something that has a lot of advocacy in the Space Force today. Maneuver is needed to respond to changes on the earth, where's today's crisis. Maneuver is also needed perhaps for defensive reasons. So by being able to refuel and have fuel depots, we can enable this. The modularity and having some interface standards and that sort of thing can allow us to get to orbit more quickly. And this is a key vulnerability that we're facing today. Our adversaries seem to be able to place things on orbit faster than we do and keep ahead of us in terms of introducing new technologies quickly. There is a long list of payloads that DoD has on its space test program list, some of which languish there for years waiting for a way to get to space. A platform that could host several payloads at a time and change them out frequently would be very valuable for in-space test and qualification. The new launch vehicles could launch modules rather than fully integrated payloads, so their concerns about their reliability would be mitigated. And you could even imagine an airline-like schedule of launches where if your module isn't ready, the next module will be launched and yours can go next month, sort of thing. Debris was discussed significantly and extensively by the think tank. And not only is debris removal important for some of the large commercial constellations that are going up, the Space Development Agency is also looking at large constellations proliferated in low Earth orbit. And to be a good space citizen, they will need to consider how to remove the non-operating satellites from those orbits. Antenna assembly, interferometers, radar antennas, and inspection are all enabled by logistics, assembly, fuel depots, and even perhaps some multi-payload hosting platforms could perform some of these functions. So it's a wide range of benefits for defense and national security space. In the last part of the think tank, we talked about the how. We brainstormed what are the political, the economic, the technical issues, the legal issues facing this vision. And one of them, the first one is we all need to work together. Without federal direction, companies will develop, you know, certain capabilities that they see that are needed for their parochial needs, and the leadership won't be there. We need to find a way to incentivize the leadership of government to take this on as a major infrastructure project. Slide 14. Architectures that you see being developed today, for the most part, do not include SMART. I will say that the Space Force is starting to look at requirements on some of their new spacecraft for interfaces that will allow the spacecraft to be serviced, to have both a refueling capability and the ability to add new avionics on orbit. The players that can play in this are some traditional companies as well as new entrants to the field. And this is exciting because it suggests that we can actually expand the space industrial base, make our supply chains less fragile. But we have to figure out a way to get everyone marching to the same sheet of music. We need policies, standards, best practices, very much as the CONFERS is doing for the specific case of rendezvous and servicing operations. And last but not least, we need a workforce that can support smart technology in operation. And that's something that we can't do piecemeal. So going on to slide 15, which I think is Rudra.
Yes, thank you, Gordon. And as we look at the challenges that Gordon listed, you know, we have to keep in mind that what we're talking about in the vision is not one mission, right? It's the very core of how we do operations in space for the future. It's a paradigm. And as with every paradigm change, you know, there's a lot of work to be done. The government can continue. I think I would say emphasis on continue to be a catalyst, because the government has done a lot of these things that we identified earlier that has led us to this point that we can have a conversation like this. We do things on the ISS, right? We assemble instruments on the ISS You have a whole logistic chain of getting to the ISS and coming back and so forth. We're doing the OSAM-1 and OSAM-2 missions that are demonstrating some of the technologies DARPA is doing with Grumman, the RSGS mission, which is not a tech demo. It's an actual mission for servicing in space. So a lot of things are happening. We're already doing the first missions. You know, if you go back 10, 15 years ago, there was Orbital Express, which demonstrated a lot of what we are talking about as a technology demonstration and so forth. So the challenge is not so much the technology only or the first few missions. It's the infusion of SMART into a way of doing business in space. And the government can potentially help turn that into a possibility by creating the markets for in-space operations, perhaps even acting as the anchor tenants of buying down the risk and providing the impetus for industry to provide these as services, support some of the exploratory formulation efforts and concept studies as we continue to do in different parts of the community. But more importantly, initiate architecture-level strategies that incorporate SMART philosophies, right? The things on the docket, if you will. We sort of imagine the future with the lens that we are used to of how we do business. And maybe it's time to revisit some of these objectives with a SMART lens on and so forth. Technologies, the SMART technology activities, early phase, that is something that the government is investing in and continuing to do so. Facilitating standards and best practices. You heard Gordon talk about CONFERS, extending that to the different elements of SMART and maybe looking at SMART as an ecosystem, and coordination among international partners, because a lot of work is going on among the international domain and figuring out a posture of thing within that in that field. And so when we talked about, you know, within our think tank, one of the ideas that jumped out from a how perspective is this notion of forming either an innovation institute or a consortium to formally organize different elements that are doing work in this area so that we can all collectively benefit from the sum of parts being larger than the whole. Sorry, the whole being larger than the sum of parts. Sorry about that. And we sort of came back and felt that it could be a private-public collaboration between the government and the private entities, led perhaps by NASA and DOD, and some of the examples there. There could be other parts of the government that could help facilitate it. And there was a notion that, you know, one of the things that could really be a driver is sort of creating this sense of going past the single missions and coming up with the first instance of that ecosystem, doing some formulation activities or figuring out how that ecosystem could come together. And as we saw in our previous slides, the multi-hosting platform or the persistent platform, the long-range transfer vehicle, and the fuel depot jump out as, you know, sort of three instances that one could take as a trio that forms that ecosystem of getting up from the ground into space using diverse launch vehicles, even transportation in space, refueling and sustainment and so forth. We're not necessarily saying that these are the missions that one should do, but these are an example set of missions that form the first instance of an ecosystem, and maybe more work could be done in looking at the benefits of that and how do we get there, so to speak. So moving to slide 16, we talked about this consortium or innovation institute idea and why would that be and what would it do kind of a thing. And this is not, this is something that we're continuing to, you know, think about, work together and try to define. But some of the comments that we heard are listed over here, ranging all the way from reducing direct government investment, through the public-private partnership mechanism, facilitates space economy through a healthy space industry base and a variety of partnerships, integration of different capabilities, mitigating redundancies potentially between different sources of funding and systematic investments that are traceable to missions or getting towards that vision as we identified, develops a community of practitioners and customers and promotes our diversity of the performer base and pushes the boundary on what we're doing in terms of innovation. But it, you know, thematically increases the visibility of SMART and encourages the wider adoption in many different ways. I think that's what it comes down to, so that this institute or consortium could become a resource for all sectors of the space community to take advantage of, to participate in, and so forth. If you move to slide 17, you know, I started by saying we've looked at these images that I showed on slide one. And so why now, right? Why now are we talking about this vision as a potential for reality? And we felt collectively, this is something that we heard over and over, that we stand at an opportune moment where we can, for the first time in some cases, leverage these emerging technologies to make timely contributions to the challenges that lie ahead of us. And I think the underlying message there as well is some of these cannot wait for 4 to 6 years. You know, we cannot proceed perhaps at the one mission at a time pace, but we need to do something about adoption and cannot wait for the 4 to 6 years. And here are some of the reasons, some of the representative reasons that we heard that point towards alignment between technology readiness through significant investments over the last several years and decade and more in some cases, and the emergence of a push-pull dynamic between stakeholders and performer base and so forth. And if you read through the bulleted list over there, we talk about the emergence of launch vehicles, the robotics in space becoming more reliable and ubiquitous, if you will. The decadal surveys are being planned at about, you know, the turn of the decade, if you will, science missions and so forth that will be, will define what we want to do. And there's an urgency to develop more resiliency in response to different space architectures because of that. The competitive interests that are emerging, and I don't want to get into it in too much, but we are aware of, you know, space is now a domain where we have multiple entities working. And the Space Force is in its formative years, and it's trying to define where we go from here. And SMART can be instrumental in some of their architecture definitions and reaching out to some of the goals. And then space debris, right? We talk about all of these constellations that are being planned and some of them being executed. Space debris is only going to get worse, and so that's another aspect of an urgency button, if you will, that's ringing. So if I go to slide 18, this is sort of our last slide. As I mentioned, we didn't stand down at the end of our planned activities, but we have continued. We meet every week and a couple of meetings every week and so forth. Some of the activities that are ongoing is trying to formulate how we formally organize, either as an institute or as a consortium, telling this story of outreach and community engagement like we're doing here, reaching out to different parts of the stakeholder base, talking about what we have learned and what we are planning to do in the future. Deep dive into the return of investment story, the value proposition. We have done that only qualitatively, so that may be something that we can get into as we go forward. Some of the near-term exploratory mission concept ideas and such. So this activity is not standing down. It's going forward. It's not exclusive. So if there's an interest, definitely do reach out to us. We'll be putting out our webpage soon, listed over there. It's actually up, but under construction. So there'll be a report that we'll be generating from this. We are working on that. Expect to have something in the 6 to 8 weeks and do an event to introduce that report. But as we close, I want to remind us of the basic tenets of what we learned, that the challenge today is not that of technology alone, right? It is more so about the adoption of SMART as a paradigm into the state of play. And there is a role for both the private and the public sector, both in terms of leadership and collaboration, to help us transition to that next generation of space operations that are enabled by SMART. And we feel perhaps a consortium or innovation, perhaps Innovation Institute could be a way forward as we try to organize and think about how SMART can be infused. So with that, we'll stop. The last slide has the roster for our think tank participants. And again, thank you everybody for your attention. Thank you to the organizers for giving us this forum. to speak about this activity. Any questions?
Great. Good. Thank you, folks. Thank you so much. And as a moderator, I'm going to, it's my prerogative to ask the first question. So back on slide 15, concepts that are examples of what might be the first, there could be demonstration, whatever term you want to use, the first smart developed missions. So hypothetically, they move forward and they're very successful and so on, we all wish. What are you thinking, say, several years out, a few years after they are deployed? Have you given some thought to the second, what would be second missions enabled via the smart mission? Rudra or Gordon?
Harley, thank you for that question. So, you know, the graphic on the multi-hosting platform, right? The way we thought about this, this is not the next generation of ISS. It's basically the next generation of spacecraft. It looks like a geocom bus, which has a truss and a robot associated with it, right? So there could be a change in the way of, you know, we think of unitary spacecraft from being one entity to them becoming persistent assets ubiquitously, where there's continual revisit, technology update, and refreshment, refueling, servicing of these spacecraft. So when you talk about the next step, Harley, at least in my head, and I can say probably for the entire think tank as well, we sort of see that the transitions happening iteratively towards the definition of what is a space asset, changing from the one spacecraft that you launched into a single orbit to an ecosystem, as we were mentioning earlier, where these persistent assets all exist and work in a supply chain infrastructure and construction in space mode.
So I'd like to add on to that a little bit. Thank you, Harley, for asking. So maybe the second thing we do is to get all these systems to play with each other. You know, perhaps if a persistent platform were launched into GEO, it could interact with RSGS. If one were launched into one of the LEO orbits where Landsat 7 and OSAM 1 is, there could be an interaction there. We can use some of the existing assets like those to test things. For example, assembly of joints that might be used in a future space telescope. Once we have systems out there that people start to believe in, people will start asking, okay, please, can you do this for me? And that's where that second set of missions will come from. It's when people get over the skepticism.
Right.
I mean, that's what happened with Northrop Grumman's mission extension vehicle, right? Everybody was like, well, I don't know about that. But once it docked with Intelsat 901 and started maintaining its position, that changed the whole mentality as far as space servicing was concerned. Now we need to change the mentality for the other aspects of SMART, the manufacturing, assembly, and transport.
Good. Thank you. Okay, do folks have other questions?
Yeah, this is Alex Ignatieff in Houston. So it's a question for all you folks. It's a more of a philosophical question than not. It's a great concept in terms of SMART with respect to transition, helping us transition to space. But from my perspective, what I've seen is you folks are localized to orbital space and not Earth-Moon space as a minimum. The Moon is becoming a strong international thrust right now, and it seems to be somewhat excluded from the future developments that you're focusing on. So maybe a response to that, please.
Alex, I'll jump in.
Okay.
I'll jump in here. Slide 7, if you look at it, you know, in terms of the diversity of activities that SMART could support, it's not limited to LEO and GEO, or even cislunar space. We talked about, you know, things that happen on the surface of the Moon. There's a commonality of technology basis, if you will, that extends to some of the operations on the surface of the Moon that could be in support of Artemis and other activities on the Moon. So I definitely want to point out that we are not just thinking about things happening in the LEO or the GEO environment, but it's a diverse set of locations, if you will.
Actually, yeah, if you look like, at our logo, if you look at our little logo in the upper left, you will see, that it definitely intentionally included NRHO and LLO
it's just that on slide 8, sustainability is defined as recycling and reuse and not really sustainability. Just as my comment, but I understand. But thank you.
Well, one application that got talked about a little bit, NASA has given SpaceX a contract for Dragon XL to do a logistics resupply of the Lunar Gateway. But what if some supplies needed to be sent there out of cycle, right? What if there was some, relatively urgent situation that required something to go up or something to come down? This infrastructure, even if it was, primarily for geo or whatever, might be able to fill that bill. So I think it's definitely in the statistics.
Okay, good. Good question, good answer. Other questions, folks?
Hey, this is Sam. It's been a really great talk, so I greatly appreciate it. I was thinking about, you want to enable the smart vision and your initial investments, you want to try to push as many of the different architectures as possible. And it seems that robotics best fits that bill. So do you think that the current level of funding for space robotics is, somewhat appropriate for, what the vision is? Do you foresee it to be, needed to be increased or, how serious is space robotics being taken given how important it is?
I want to put in a plug for one of my clients, the Defense Innovation Unit. If you go to their website right now, diu.mil, you'll see a brand new area of interest that was just posted on Monday, and it's called Modularity for Space Systems. And one of the key technologies that's sought in that is lower cost multi-use robotic arms. So that's another agency that along with DARPA, along with Goddard, that's putting resources toward making space robotics more available and more useful.
Okay, good. We got a couple of minutes left until we nominally sign off. Other questions? What other questions, folks? Okay. Great. Excellent. Yeah, go ahead if somebody's got a question. All right.
Ali, I was just going to say if anybody wants to reach back to us and participate or have comments and so forth, please feel free to reach out to us by email, to any of the organizers listed on the page 1 or any of the participants if you know them better.
Udra, thank you so much. So, again, excellent presentation. Thank you. And good questions. Folks, we're going to sign off. Talk to you all next Wednesday. You all take care. Thank you.